Hi everyone, it's Aliza Licht here, your host, and I'm so thrilled to share that my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception, is out now. I hope you'll pick up a copy because personal branding is for everyone. It's for the new graduate starting out, the middle manager looking to level up, the executive who wants to be a thought leader, the entrepreneur starting from scratch. It's for anyone who wants to pivot or transition into something new. Because having a strong personal brand means that your name gets dropped in rooms you're not in, and that you're thought of for opportunities that other people haven't even heard of yet. So pick up a copy, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. Candace Nelson is a serial entrepreneur, a New York Times bestselling author, a Wall Street Journal contributor, and an expert in turning one's passion into a profitable business. Her book, Sweet Success, A Simple Recipe for Turning Your Passion into Profit, has recently been published. I mean, everyone is reading this book, Candace. You revolutionized the baking industry, and you have a really interesting start to your career, which we're going to get into. But what's crazy is you've now parlayed your entrepreneurial spirit into a whole other category. And you, of course, continue to expand your portfolio of investments with CN2 Ventures. And you live in LA with your kids and your dog. And I'm super happy to have you on Leave Your Mark, Candace. So welcome.
Thank you so much for that lovely intro. And thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So first and foremost, listen, you've done so much media and your story is incredible and we're going to drop nuggets of it. But I think what's really important, and especially in the time we're in right now, is you really made a massive pivot from corporate. You were laid off in the dot-com bubble. Tell us a little bit about that period. And also, when you were in that role specifically, were you having fantasies about doing something else? I know these jobs can be very soul-sucking. So like, from a creative entrepreneurial spirit, were you ever thinking like, maybe one day I'll do something? Or was that not even on your radar?
Thinking back to that time when I was working in corporate finance, working in a technology company, and very immersed in Silicon Valley, my understanding of entrepreneurship was very much about, you know, the founder of this semiconductor company or the e-commerce company. And a lot of these CEOs and founders that I was working with on the banking side were tech savants. They were engineers. They were a type of entrepreneurship that felt very out of reach for me, daunting, intimidating. And so I don't know that I ever really thought of myself in that way. And in addition to that, I'd been raised in this family that was very risk averse. My dad was a corporate lawyer and really just leaned into traditional education and following a certain career path where you sort of were loyal to one company for a very long time. So I guess I didn't really think of myself as ever being courageous enough to follow that path. But I think when life sort of shakes the snow globe, right, then all of a sudden all options are on the table. I thought I was doing everything right. I went to the right school. I was recruited to a prestigious investment bank. I went to work for a technology company when everyone was doing that. And then sure enough, life threw me a curveball and I was, you know, on the couch watching reruns of the Oprah Winfrey Show. So that's when you're able to do a little self-reflection and think maybe I've been buying into this myth that X and Y leads to Z. Maybe it's time to start thinking about all of this in a new way. And one thing for sure, soul sucking, couldn't have said it better myself. I definitely realized how much time we spend every day working and how draining it can be when you don't love what you're doing. And so at a minimum, I knew I needed to make a change to pivot to something that I was more passionate about.
So you're on your couch, you're watching Oprah, you're watching Martha. And I know that your grandmother was a prolific desserts person. All of this is great. I too was on my couch many times watching those shows. My grandmother also baked. I have never once thought, let me start a cupcake company. So where did that nugget of inspo come from?
Well, it didn't happen immediately. It was sort of a series of realizations and aha moments. It started with me deciding to go to pastry school instead of business school, which was the next logical step on my predictable corporate track. I went to pastry school really without a plan. I just wanted to test my interest in baking. I'd grown up baking with my mom. We lived overseas a lot of my childhood. And so baking was something I did because I loved it and I loved to eat the results, but also it was my connection to my homeland. Baking to me was about baking those American desserts that I really missed. And so baking always represented something more. It was really about belonging and home. And of course, then I went to boarding school, I went to college, and I was working in investment banking. There wasn't a lot of time for baking in my life. So I kind of rediscovered it. And at the time was living in San Francisco, which is just such an incredibly vibrant food city. And so I was, you know, learning about chefs and ingredients. And it was just this sort of perfect scenario for me to lean into baking and learn about it at this local pastry school that I went to called Tante Marie's. And then of course that business side of my brain did not go away. So I knew I had to do something entrepreneurial with it. And at the time, cupcakes were really just a commodity. You found them in the supermarket bakery. They were stacked up in plastic clamshells. And I remember walking through the bakery one morning and thinking, God, those are kind of sad.
What year was this?
Let's see, that probably would have been 2001. And thinking, here's this beloved American treat. And of course, I have this obsession with American treats because I grew up almost like a foreigner. And look at how we're treating it. You know, it's like we have all these beautiful desserts, these European style desserts, beautiful wedding cakes, but like the cupcake should be celebrated. And it's so sad. And so I decided that the cupcake needed a makeover.
Rebrand of the cupcake. It was like the stepchild dessert.
Yes, it was. I mean, the thing is, we ate them, but we didn't really love eating them because they weren't that good. They were like, the frosting was made with shortening. There were all those waxy, awfully colored sprinkles, and just were kind of shelf stable sometimes, you know, made with mixes. And it's like, wait a second, why is this relegated to a kid's lunchbox when this is something that we all really want to eat if done well? And so I set about to reinvent the cupcake from the inside out.
How did you think about brand when you started?
I thought about elevating the cupcake so that it was something aspirational, giftable, almost like a luxury, an affordable luxury. I wanted the whole brand to reflect that. Everything from how the cupcake looked to the experience of the store and how we really leaned into our customer service. But the brand really stemmed from this idea of injecting joy and delight into people's lives, into everyday moments. So as much as I wanted it to be an elevated treat, it still had to be playful and joyful and not lose the identity of what a cupcake was, which was this sort of childlike nostalgia. I always knew that I had to create a really strong brand because I was betting my whole life savings on something that was basically not defensible. You know, anyone can bake a cupcake. Anyone can start a bakery. So what was that moat going to be? How was I going to defend against competitors? So early on, brand was very much top of mind.
You also have changed the experience of cupcake purchasing. Mm-hmm. And the cupcake ATM, I will never forget because it was right on Lexington, right? I forget which street, but near Bloomingdale's. I saw this and I'm like, this is a cupcake ATM. That is the most genius thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Where did that idea come from?
So as an entrepreneur, I think a lot of times we tend to see challenges as opportunities. So leaning into problems to find solutions that we could maybe make a profit from. And that's exactly what happened with the cupcake ATM. So it was late at night. I was pregnant with my second son. I was customer number one at Sprinkles. Like I ate my product consistently, constantly. I ate dark chocolate cupcakes through both of my pregnancies. And it was late at night. I had a craving. There were no cupcakes in the house. The bakery was closed. And I was having a moment where I was like, wait a second, I own a cupcake shop and I can't even get my hands on one. And so instead of just going to sleep and, you know, dealing with my craving, I started playing with the idea of what it would look like if you could get a cupcake anytime, day or night. And this is actually my husband, Charles, is my co-founder. And people always ask, like, well, don't you want to like turn off work at a certain point? And yes, of course, you have to draw boundaries and you have to have some work-life balance. But the best brainstorms sometimes happen when you don't do that, right? It was late at night. We shouldn't have been talking about work, but sure enough, we were. And that's when the brainstorm happened.
But like the idea of an ATM, this was my thought. This is probably the dumbest comment I'll ever say on Leave Your Mark, but
I'm ready.
What goes on behind the ATM? Because I always think about like bank machine ATM and you're like, how much money is back there? Like how many cupcakes are about? Like, how does it work?
Well, we're on our next generation of machines. So the machine has evolved. But back in the day, I think it held up to 600 cupcakes. Oh, but you could only get one at a time. And there was a robotic arm behind there. All the cupcakes are individually boxed. And using a touchscreen, you know, you would choose your cupcake flavor and give your credit card. And then all of a sudden in the back, you'd see this robotic arm like choosing your flavor. And then poof, there was your cupcake. But there were rumors at the beginning that there were elves behind the, you know, the machine. And
I could have definitely run with that rumor. Like I for sure could have run with that rumor. Do you ever see it going into airports or places like that?
Yes, we're in airports and expanding in airports. So definitely look around next time you're in an airport.
You might see
one.
So amazing. So when we think about a unique business proposition, you know, obviously we see many companies that were super popular 10 years ago that are starting to like not be the new kid on the block anymore. How do you think about just the journey of your brand and the evolution of that business?
Well, the only constant is change. And that's why it's hard to run a business because you can innovate once, but guess what? Everybody is sure to copy you if you're successful. And the key is to continue to innovate. Right? Because yes. Everybody can copy what you've done, but they can't copy that mindset, that innovation that is like never at rest. And that's exactly what happened with us. You know, we opened the first ever cupcakes only bakery. We really made luxury cupcakes a thing. And then sure enough, the landscape just exploded. And so though we were initially like a first mover, all of a sudden I woke up and I looked around. I'm like, we're just one in a crowded pack now. Like, what are we going to continue to do? And so constantly looking at everything we did through the lens of innovation, bringing, you know, our tech background and our finance background to an industry like baking. I mean, I think that's where a lot of innovation happens is when you are pulling ideas across industries and looking at businesses with a new perspective and through fresh eyes. So everything from like our whisper words that we did. We were first to use Facebook back in the early days as a small business in creative ways. Even Sheryl Sandberg like mentioned us as a business that was using it well. We would basically push whisper words out to our social media followers, and then they would come in, whisper to the cashier and get a free cupcake. Now, granted, that was back in the old algorithm, the chronological algorithm. So, you know, we couldn't do that today. But, you know, everything we were doing, we were constantly trying to look at it with new eyes and surprise and delight people with everything, whether it was a whisper words, new cupcake flavors, new innovations like the cupcake ATM.
So smart. Now you have gone into another food category. So now you are officially a birthday party because you have the pizza and you have the cupcakes. So that's good.
That's
right?
So funny. I told someone the other day I was a walking kids' birthday party. I've got everything you need.
So you just fell in love with this pizza. Tell us the story.
So there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there who can sort of analyze the landscape of an industry, see an opportunity, a white space, and then build a business for that. That's just not how I operate. For me, I really have to love what I'm doing. I learned early on that I didn't want to be doing something just completely cold and analytical. I want to be drawn to it. And for me, food is that passion. So it has evolved from cupcakes to pizza now. I met our co-founder, executive chef, Daniele Uditi at a party. I took one bite of his pizza and had a moment where I was like, whoa, okay, hold on. This is amazing. Who made this? So I walked over to him. We spent the whole night like chatting by the wood-burning oven and we're very simpatico. Like we were both bakers, you know, we work with different types of dough, but we really spoke the same language. And I realized that he also was very interested in taking simple foods and elevating them. And he was doing that with pizza. What I had done with cupcakes, he was doing with pizza. And he had just recently come from Naples, Italy, with like $200 in his pocket and his grandmother's starter. And so he had this incredible, like, coming to America story. And he told me that part of his American dream was to open his own restaurant someday. And I couldn't help myself. I just said, I would love to do that with you, because I just could see it. Like,
you just met him like 4 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He had such an incredible story, such a talent, such a passion. And I could see it all come together. I saw the brand. I saw, you know, the opportunity. And before I knew it, I was back in the food business, but now in restaurants.
Amazing. So where are those?
So we have 4 in Los Angeles. We're growing in Southern California. And we also just opened one in Dallas, Texas. It's called Pizzana, and it's neo-Neapolitan pizza. So basically, we're bringing the best of Italy to American tastes and sensibilities using this beautiful ingredients, great technique. Daniele does this dough called slow dough, which rises and ferments over 2 days and then gets topped with San Marzano tomatoes that are grown for us in Italy. We have Fiordalatte cheese flown in from Italy every week, and then it gets fired in the hottest oven possible. And so the result is this crust that's really crisp and still has that characteristic chew of Neapolitan pizza, but you can pick it up and it will hold as a slice, unlike traditional Neapolitan pizza that you have to eat with a fork and knife. And so that, you know, that's what Americans love. We love our handheld foods. That's what a cupcake is. So a slice of za is. That's what, you know, a hot dog and a hamburger is. So that was really important. And again, bringing this lens of innovation to pizza by creating this new style, but then also, we didn't do takeout and delivery for the first year. And that was because we had such a focus on the quality of the product that we didn't trust it coming out of a cardboard box. And I mean, our customers were like, where's the pizza equals takeout. Hello, guys. What's going on? And we were maniacal about it. So we innovated on takeout and came up with our heat and slice system, whereby we bake off your pizza without the fresh toppings in our oven, like 99% of the way. And then we package the fresh toppings on the side. We don't cut it. And then you fire it off just to heat it up a little bit in your home oven, add your fresh toppings and cut it. And it's almost exactly what you get at the restaurant.
Wow. Oh my God. I really wish I was in California to try that. But I also think it's ironic. You grew up in foreign places and you wanted to have the American baking. And now you're in America and you're bringing in the foreign food. It's kind of the opposite.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, I'm all mixed up. I don't know where I belong.
Fascinating. Okay, so you're doing all this stuff, Candace, and then what made you want to put this into a book?
As I've been operating businesses, I've also been doing a little bit of angel investing and mentoring some female founders, and I just wanted to do it at scale. There's only so many hours in the day, and being a founder is truly one of the hardest things you can do. And founders need so much support, particularly female founders. And I just felt moved and compelled to share my story in a book because I think the media glamorizes this certain specific type of entrepreneur, you know, guys who are raising hundreds of millions of dollars or building rocket ships to the moon. And here I was, a very unlikely entrepreneur, certainly had a great education and a good start on my career, but I didn't have any funding. I bootstrapped this. I wasn't working with technology. I was making something that anyone could make. And I still built and scaled and sold a really big business. So I wanted people to understand that there's a spectrum to entrepreneurship and that story doesn't always get told. And I wanted to make some of these business concepts more accessible to people who might feel intimidated by it otherwise.
I think that's a really good point because it all does feel very daunting. Mm-hmm. It's actually one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I felt like a lot of the really big podcasts that talk about career journeys, like everyone is so at the top, but they gloss over a little bit of like what they did, right? So in this book, is it like a guide where you follow these steps, or is it more of a memoir? Like, how do you see the reader absorbing it?
I wanted to incorporate my own personal stories, but I did not want it to be a memoir because I really wanted to give aspiring founders the tools, the roadmap, the actionable tools to actually put some of this theory into practice. And so Sweet Success is a book from conception to sale. So starting with the mindset and the inspiration through building and crafting a brand, stepping into your personal brand, to building a team, finding a co-founder, building company culture, protecting your intellectual property, registering your business, and then ultimately what exits could potentially happen for your business. So if you've started a business, you'll get something from it. If you're just thinking about a business, you'll get something from it. But I do want it to kind of live on people's shelf where they can refer to it time and time again, because it does take you through this journey.
What do you think are the three biggest reasons someone should read this book?
I think if they're scared or they're suffering from imposter syndrome, they should read this book, because I hope that I communicate the importance of action. When I first opened Sprinkles, there were so many people that came in and said, this was my idea. And I didn't really know what to think of that at first.
Wow.
I felt like maybe that was people were trying to take something from me, because I somehow thought I was really unique and original because everyone had told me it wouldn't work. And I thought I was really a trailblazer. But it really highlighted for me, an idea is not, they're kind of a dime a dozen, right? I mean, it's really about the steps you take to put that idea into action. That's what will set you apart. And so for me, even though I thought I had this great idea, that wasn't my special sauce. My special sauce was that I'd had the courage to actually do something about it. And so certainly someone who feels like they have more in them, but they're not sure how to take those first steps, this book is great for them. People who are small business owners and who are struggling with stepping into their personal brand or crafting a brand. And what does that even really mean? Like, what does your brand stand for? I think there's something there as well. And then also founders who are curious about funding. I mean, you have to get really real about funding, whether you're bootstrapping or raising money from friends and family or building a high growth company and ultimately want to raise funding from venture capitalists. I'd say those are probably the three main things. But ultimately, my goal in this is just to help more women out there bet on themselves and pursue their dreams that they're maybe scared to do.
I love that. You know, it's so funny that you bring up personal brand. You know that I have a book coming out on the subject in April. And I asked somebody on the podcast, do you think you need to have a personal brand to be an entrepreneur? And the answer from this person was no. Because I was saying, like, does the founder need to be the face of the brand, have a personal brand, you know, reflective of the company? And I really am aligned with what you're saying, because I do feel that we live in a world today where it's a non-negotiable. So can you speak a little bit about how you see your own personal brand next to your actual brand and why you think that helps you do what you do?
Sure. Well, I think it's just such an incredible differentiator. It's such a noisy market out there. And I think particularly in this next generation, they are looking for brands where their values align with their purchasing decisions, right? So a brand can stand up and say, we stand for X, Y, and Z. But when they're humanized by a person behind it, that really is walking the talk on a daily basis, like they feel better about that. And I also feel like it's a missed opportunity. We all have social media at our disposal. It's free. I mean, certainly it takes time. And sometimes if you want to devote resources to it, it isn't free. But I do think that it's a missed opportunity. And if you're not controlling your own narrative, who is?
Yes. Well said. Well said. You're very honed in on niches, right? You've got your cupcakes, you've got your pizza. When you talk about speaking to a smaller demographic or like starting small, what does that mean to you?
I think you have to get really clear on what your take is in the world of thought leadership, right? What do you want to be known for? And what are people turning to you for? Because everyone has their own set of unique experiences, their perspective. What I hear from women a lot of the time is like, who am I to be showing up on LinkedIn and talking about this or turning the camera on my face and sharing my take on the recent, whatever, funding round? It's like, you have all the authority to do that because everyone's opinion is valid. So I think once you really hone in on what it is your perspective is and what you like talking about, that'll help you find your audience and then grow from there. Like my friend Dolma Alton has built an incredible following on TikTok. And she started by just being very specific, talking about beauty brands. And now she developed such a fervent following that now she's going fully into lifestyle. Like, people want to know what beauty products she's using. People want to know, you know, what she's doing in her day-to-day life. And if she had started there, I don't think she would have broken through the noise.
That's a really good point. One of your mottos is nothing that is worth doing is ever easy. What do you find hard to do?
Everything.
No, but like, obviously there are certain things that you're probably amazing at. And then there's certain things that maybe you pass off to someone else. What are things that you're just like, I'm not good at that. Someone else can do that.
I'm not good at busy work. I'm just too ADHD. I get bored easily. And so bookkeeping, accounting, contracts, these sorts of things are not my strong suit. I really love the more creative aspects of my business. And for a while, I kind of chastised myself for not being good at these things that I'm not good at. And then it's like, no, your power is in recognizing what you are good at and leaning into that and outsourcing what you're not as good at, because otherwise you're just wasting hours. So you have to always be optimizing your skill set.
Totally. But then now I'm thinking, wait, so how did you start in the industry that you started in if those are not your strong suits?
Oh, with investment banking?
Yes.
Well, you do have to have a strong understanding of accounting to go into investment banking, but it was really just a good business education all around. And yeah, I mean, I think I've been clear that it wasn't the right fit for me. So
who or what do you turn to when you need inspiration?
You know, I really like finding space in my head and going for a walk and being in nature. That's when like the neurons just start firing. I don't know what it is about like forward momentum, physical forward movement, that actually helps me think about ideas for the future. And then just being in nature, like, I can't wait to just get outside because I know that I'm going to have a bazillion brainstorms. Now, the struggle is which ones I take action on and staying focused, because I am very sort of shiny object syndrome, ADHD.
When you think about the early days of when you were sitting on that couch watching Oprah, watching Martha Stewart, at the time, there weren't probably as many female role models as there are today. Mm-hmm. When you think about your own role in this world to sort of pay forward what you've learned, what do you hope young women will take away from you as a human, your book, your business?
I hope they will see that it doesn't take someone really that extraordinary to build something exceptional. Really boils down to being passionate and determined and resilient and, you know, hearing no a million times and continuing to forge ahead.
No is always so personal though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it paralyzes people. How do you keep on moving forward if there is a no?
I think you have to build that muscle. I think it is human nature to get frozen by a no and feel like, okay, that means no. But what if it doesn't mean no? What if there are no rules? You know, what if? Just keep asking yourself, what if? And keep reminding yourself that the founder of Canva got 100 no's from VCs before she got her first yes. Like, that's unbelievable to me. Think about how hard it is to hear one no. Mm-hmm. Then hear 10 no's. She got to 100? That's phenomenal. So I look to other people who have been strong and courageous and resilient. And I always keep that as inspiration for myself, but also just continuing to challenge yourself. Hear no, face the fear and do it anyway. You're building that muscle. And it's not that hearing no or failing gets any easier, but you get better at handling it.
It's so true. It's so true. 100 no's is really a lot of no's though. By the way, Canva's my favorite branding site. So I'm a fangirl for that. Candace, you have such amazing energy, first of all, and you have so many ideas, and I can't even imagine how many you will come back with after Idaho. What's your mental filter process to decide like this is right or no, that's not right? You went head on for the pizza, right? You like felt that in your gut. So when you do have a million ideas, how do you vet your own thoughts?
always working on that. I was, to be totally honest with you. I mean, I love that expression. If it's not a hell yeah, it's a no. I think it's so true. It's like, you can't go into anything half-assed. Like, it has to be so intentional, because it really does require that level of focus and momentum and energy to get anything done. I mean, to even get off the couch, you have to be intentional about that. So there was a moment that after, you know, selling a significant stake in Sprinkles, that I kind of thought, oh, I got this, like, I got this down. I got my entrepreneurship muscle all flexed and I'm going to be good at this. And my husband and I started a few businesses in addition to Pete's on it. And it's sort of like the venture studio model, right? Where you start a lot of things and then one kind of rises to the top and starts getting some momentum. And then you put all your energy towards that. So that's kind of what happened. But it made me realize, like, just because you've had success before doesn't mean it is guaranteed again. And actually, in a way, it can be a little scarier. Whereas Sprinkles, there were no expectation of success. So I kind of felt like, you know what? I fall flat on my face. I'm just doing what everyone expected anyway. I can only succeed at this point. With Pizzana, all of a sudden, it was like all eyes on the Sprinkles founders, right? Like, what are the Sprinkles founders doing? Sure. They're going into pizza? Huh, what are they going to do? Like, it was just like this laser focus on this. And I felt this intense pressure to live up to this expectation somehow, even though restaurants are so different than what we had been doing before. So I think that for me, there are so many ways to make a decision. You make it with your gut, you make it with your heart, you make it with your mind. And depending on the decision, I use a different part of my body. Sometimes a pro and con list can help too.
Fair answer. Fair answer. So last question is always, how do you ultimately want to leave your mark? What is the headline for Candace Knoll?
Oh my God, that's a heavy one. I don't know that I'm prepared for that. Let me think. I think it's Candace Nelson was known for disrupting an industry and then inspiring and helping other female founders to follow their dreams.
Love it. See, you did great. Thank you. Candace, you know what? I have to say, for everyone listening, Candace and I are in the same women's community. And when you sent out your thank you email to the community for all the people that contributed to helping you with your book, I read every single word, and it was the most thoughtful, sincere, loveliest thank you email I've ever read. I totally kept it. I was like, copy paste, putting that in a document.
You should. Those people are going to help you too.
No, but even just how you phrased it. Oh. And I do think it's actually one of the reasons I also wanted you to come on the show, because so many people forget along the way who has helped, right? Mm-hmm. So many people, one of my big phrases is like, close the loop with people. Mm. Keep track of like the introductions and whatever. So you can go back and remember like, oh my God, like 2 years ago, actually, so-and-so was the one who introduced me to that. And look where this ended up. So
true. That's great advice. And you know what I think about that? Like, I do think this next generation needs to learn that. So that you to please beat that drum louder, because, you know, just even, I don't know, in sending people off for potential job interviews or internships, and then I never hear, I just want to know what happens, right?
Totally.
It's really important. And, you know, it's a good reminder for me. I try to, sometimes obviously things fall through the cracks, but particularly when you're asking a big favor, like to get an interview or help in a significant way, it's important to close that loop.
Totally. Well, in my book On Brand that's coming out, I dive into this in a heavy way, but I also think that it's important, but it's also really special when you see it in action. So thank you for setting an example with that. And I can't wait to see what you do next and how this all continues to grow. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for those kind words. And also, I am so excited about your book.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I pre-order it now?
Yes, you can actually.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening to Leave Your Mark, the podcast. If you want more career advice, be sure to pick up a copy of my best-selling book, Leave Your Mark. If you're on Instagram, make sure to follow at Leave Your Mark Podcast to stay up with the latest episodes. And of course, say hi to me at Aliza Licht XO. If you're on Twitter, definitely reach out at Aliza Licht. I would love to hear from you. If you want to subscribe to my newsletter or attend a future virtual mentoring event, go to alizalicht.com for more information. And just remember this, If change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.